It's 8:36, and you're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. We're live on weekday mornings and rebroadcast on weekday evenings on radio stations serving Oregon and California, and found online. Check us out at the website jeffexchange.org. That is all of the content of the Jefferson Exchange, all the interviews dating back 5 years plus now. 5 years and a month, I guess it is, since we've been on this website, and you can find it all there. You can also use jeffexchange.org and ijpr.org as your radio. You can listen live through the links available on either of those pages. And you can also find us on social media. We're on Facebook or on Twitter at Jeff Exchange, and you can take part in the program as it happens. Your phone calls and emails are welcome at 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Maybe you have a dog who does not quite fit into your image of a well-behaved animal. You have to remind her to stop barking at the UPS driver or stop digging on the furniture. Actually, this sounds like my dog. Lots of dogs can use a little correction to behavior from time to time. Some are nearly full-time projects. Our next guest has worked with dogs of many sizes and many dispositions. J.P. Perrette once worked with humans on their behavior. He now runs a business called K-Leadership 9, Guiding Dog Behavior, and he's in our studio to talk about that. J.P., thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Good to be here.
How did you get into this?
It was just kind of by chance. I was... for many years working with adolescents and stuff like that. And when I was in LA, I worked with families kind of as a mediator, and parents would hire me to come into their home and kind of mediate situations, focusing more so on the adolescent, but kind of like a referee almost. I would kind of call time out and kind of separate, kind of counsel the child, and I'd work with the parents and kind of coach them. So it was a really cool situation. But a family with an autistic boy, a high-functioning autistic boy, asked me to kind of take their son out to start socializing him. And I thought it'd be a good idea to go to dog parks because you got people, you got dogs, you got to learn boundaries, all that stuff. And in that process, I became friends with a dog walker in that dog park that I would see all the time. And he was training under Cesar Millan, the dog whisperer at the time. And once Caesar got his TV show, my friend kind of became really busy. Caesar would start sending him clients, and my friend kind of gave me my foundation in dog psychology and body language and behaviors, and asked me to take over his dog walking business. And with the foundation he gave me, it was a brief time, but with the foundation he gave me, I just began to flourish. And as I always say, the dogs are my teachers, and class is always in session, so I learn all the time from them.
So you apparently never worked with Cesar Millan,
no.
But you sort of got a one-off here, it sounds like.
Right. So, yeah, no, I never met him, never worked with him. And I think there was an article in the newspaper that said that I did work with him, and so I just want to correct that.
I noticed the correction.
Yeah, in the Mail Tribune. Yeah, cool. So, but no, never met him or anything like that. So
I mean, it sounds like you have some similar elements here, but, I mean, what kinds of things? Was it a lot of trial and error for you, or did you go to the library and get 6,000 books on dog training?
No. To be honest with you, being in the dog park all the time with, I would take 10 to 15, sometimes 20 dogs in a dog park with me, and I had to be on point, because when you go into dog parks, you're dealing with all sorts of things. Dog parks can be very unsafe because I think a lot of people get the idea, they just take their dog in there and it's a free-for-all, It's much like kids at a playground. You don't just let them do whatever. The humans, the parents have to intervene, And so I became very skilled at recognizing behaviors and shutting things down before bad things occurred. And I've seen a lot of bad things happen in there. And so that experience alone really gave me a lot of experience and knowledge in working with animals.
The approach that you take, JP, seems to center on establishing the owner as the leader of the pack, in a sense. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I kind of compare it to parenting, to be honest with you. So a lot of what I do when I'm teaching my clients is to constantly psychologically engage their animal, okay? There's certainly times that are appropriate to use treats, but I don't focus a lot on using treats. I focus a lot on being present. A lot of little what I call speed bumps, just constantly, whether it's a snap of the finger, whether it's touch, whether it's asking an expectation of your dog, setting boundaries. It's just constantly keeping your dog engaged in your normal flow. And that's what I really like to do. It's not a lot of, certainly some things take more time that you have to go and do 15, 20 minutes of this or that. But I focus really on your natural interaction and your flow with them throughout your day. Kind of like a toddler. If you've got a 3 or 4 year old child, you still have to do life, even though that child might be on the ground roaming around. You're paying attention while you're doing other things to keep them safe, and you're proactive in your parenting. You're not waiting for bad things to happen. You're creating a safe environment, and you're creating a teaching environment. Thus, you are kind of removing the impulsivity.
John Perrette, who goes by JP, is a dog trainer, and he's working with a group called K Leadership 9, and also has some work now going on with the Mail Tribune and Channel 10 in Medford. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about some principles to dog training and things that have worked and maybe things that you can share in stories that didn't work in dog training. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 over the phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Are there some specific tasks that you try to get dogs to do, or is it more about you're trying to get them not to do certain things?
It just kind of depends on the scenario, you know, the context, what the issue is. First and foremost, no matter what the issue is, like people will call me with, you know, they fear that their dog is aggressive towards other dogs or whatever. So one of the first things I like to do is there's a place called R&R Pet Resort in Phoenix. And on Sundays, I bring my dogs down there, which are pretty well-balanced dogs. And I invite them to come down and I will kind of get an idea of how bad it is or isn't at that point. A lot of dogs show leash reactivity or aggression on leash, and I would say probably 95% of them aren't truly aggressive, but it appears that way. So it's a catch-22 because when they act that way, the owners are kind of afraid to take them where they can be around other dogs. And so this is a wonderful opportunity to kind of have that experience to see where we're at with that. And I would say, like I said, 95% of the time, it's not as bad as they think. But again, it just depends on the context. But I always tell the owners, no matter what the issue is, I always like to go to the home to see what the dynamic is like there. And if they're doing, it's not about the one or two huge issues. It's always the tons of little things that they're doing or not doing that build up to those big things.
What are some of the frequent complaints then? I mean, what are usually the reasons that people will call you?
A lot of times it's just the dog, what they say, doesn't have manners, you know, whether it's jumping all over people. When people come over to their house, the dog's overly excited, jumping on them, not listening, you know, things of those nature. Those are probably the most common issues. So I really like to focus on, no matter what I'm doing, I teach my clients how to set boundaries and have expectations. And the first step oftentimes is your personal space. And when a dog is conditioned to be excited every time they have a human greeting, like let's say you get a puppy. This is classic. They're cute. They're cuddly. So every time you see them, you're like, oh, you're so cute. Oh, so you're creating excitement. So that dog learns that the human greeting is exciting. And they're all over you.
You're home.
Right, exactly. And it's cute when they're small, but then when they become 30, 40, 50 plus pounds, it's not cute anymore because they're jumping all over you, when it's not the dog's fault because we created that. And dogs by nature understand personal space. You don't see more submissive or subordinate dogs jumping all over like older dogs that are more confident and stuff like that because it's disrespectful. So when we as the humans create that condition, we kind of have to untangle that and create a new experience and teach them a new way.
It's about training people then, because let's face it. I mean, everybody wants to hug the puppy, but when the puppy ends up outweighing you, that's when it becomes a bit dangerous.
It's not cute anymore. So yeah, what I teach my clients typically is, and a lot of issues, no matter what they are, comes down to like excitement, whether it's aggression, whether it's poor boundaries or whatever. When a dog is escalated, whether it's exciting or whether it's potentially aggressive, when they're operating, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10 at an 8 or 9 in excitement or whatever, they're just one step away from making a poor choice. And so what I like to teach them to do is kind of slow things down, take away the excitement. Then when the dog is calm and showing respect, then we give affection.
Do all dogs get calm? I mean, we've all been around dogs that just seem like they were always going, you know, 180 RPM.
Right. Do they all eventually get calm? They certainly can, you know. I go into every situation with my formula that works 85% of the time. The other 15% of the time, I have to find out what works for that dog. And sometimes you have to meet a dog where it's at. I mean, if it's just really out of control and you have to be a little more assertive and kind of more in their space and, you know, using touch or pushing them away or whatever. But then there's the dogs that actually the more you are assertive and are using physical touch or whatever, the more they get amped up. You know what I mean? And so you have to kind of find out what works for that dog. And it's those times that my formula that I'm used to, the times that that doesn't work, that's the times where I have to dig deep and find what works for that dog. And that ends up being a new tool for my toolbox to use. You know what I mean?
But I can see where observation going into the home to see how the owner interacts with the dog is a great first step, because then you can see what kind of behavior from the human and the dog is exposed to.
Absolutely. A lot of times the common thing is, you know, and because that's where I do my training, you know, as far as working with the clients at the home. And a lot of times they'll say, do you want me to put the dog away when you come to the door? And I'm like, no, I want to see not only how they react and how they react to me, but I want to see how you guys react, because that's going to tell me a lot about, you know, how this is going to go for the rest of the training session. You know what I mean? So
John Perrette goes by JP. He's a dog trainer in the Rogue Valley. His business is called K Leadership 9. It is on the web. He also appears at the Mail Tribune and on Channel 10. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 with your dog training questions or comments. And you can also send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. From reading your webpage, JP, it seems like a major part of this is about allaying the dog's fears. Is that fair?
How so? What do you mean?
Well, it just seems like you're trying to make sure that the dog doesn't have any fears about who's in command and what its role is, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's so let's say you have a dog that is fearful or insecure, or timid, and those are my favorite dogs to work with, because I have some things that I've learned along the way that are really effective. Typically, when a dog is fearful or insecure or timid and it hasn't had a lot of leadership or boundaries, that dog ends up going to a place that it wasn't meant to go. So if you have a dog like that and you have really passive owners, then that dog sometimes feels like it has to step up and take control. And so typically a dog like that will go to either fight or flight. Like just last night, I worked with a dog that was actually very insecure, but it was acting like it wanted to bite my face off. And I felt comfortable calling its bluff. Like it was coming at me, snapping at me, and I just kind of put like my closed hand near its face, you know, not touching it or anything, but when it was like snapping at me, and as soon as I did that, like it kind of turned its face away. So I kind of called its bluff. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Most dogs are kind of bluffers like that. But so what I want to do is I want to shut down the aggressive appearing behavior. And oftentimes the minute you confront the dog and show them you're not afraid, then you see the insecurity.
So now, were you saying in essence with the hand out there, go ahead, bite me? You want to snap at me, go ahead.
No, I was letting him know, like, I'm not afraid. Mm-hmm. And I'm in close quarters. I'm not going to hurt you, but I'm putting my hand here. Mm-hmm. The reason I don't put an open hand out is because sometimes I find that, like, I do a lot of volunteer work at the animal shelters with dogs that they're not sure about. Mm-hmm. They appear aggressive or whatever. And I find that hands are usually the first thing that they bite. Mm-hmm. So I will either use my arm or something like that to touch them, and they feel safer about that. Hands are just the things that usually typically get bit. So by having a closed hand, mm-hmm. A, it's not going to be as bad if I do get bit, and B, for some reason, it's not as intimidating to them as an open hand. But to the flip side of that, once I do call their bluff, then oftentimes they'll go into flight mode. And so that's not good either, because that if they can constantly flee and escape that which makes them uncomfortable, then they never get to go through it. So one of the things I will do is I'll ask the client to put a leash on the dog. Actually, there's an episode about this coming up that I did for Channel 10 that discusses the insecure dog. So I'll have them put a leash. I'll have them hand me the leash. And it's very important when doing this, I call it exposure therapy. I don't talk, I don't pet, I don't look at the dog. I'm simply holding the leash, and initially they try to escape. Then I'll pull the dog a little bit closer, and they'll resist. And as soon as they relax in that position, I'll pull them closer until they're right next to me, until they can actually feel me. I want them to feel me. I want them to smell me. And in doing so, now they get to experience me. But it's non-intrusive because I'm not petting them. I'm not talking to them. I'm just neutral.
It's like people in an elevator. You're there next to each other, but everybody's behaving.
Right. Yeah, that's a little more awkward, I think. But in this process, you now are working this dog through that which it's fearing, but they're actually getting to experience you. And then as soon as they relax and they're next to me and they start sniffing me, then I'll kind of drop the leash, and oftentimes they won't even move. They'll kind of stay there. But sometimes when they walk away, then they look a little more relaxed. You know what I mean? So it's kind of necessary. It's kind of like when some of the approaches in therapy with people that have issues, you know, exposure therapy is a popular way of working with people to get through their issues too. But it's done in a very controlled and safe way.
Speaking of this exposure therapy, I noticed that you have done some work with police officers mm-hmm. to approach dogs on their own turf so that the dogs, A, don't bite, and B, don't have to be shot by police. I mean, what is the key to putting a dog at ease when they're on their ground protecting the people, they think.
So a few years ago I did some seminars for Jackson County Sheriff's Department, and there was other police agencies invited. And, you know, it was cool because they were very proactive. And this was a few years ago when it was kind of more of a hot topic, when a lot of dogs you'd see on YouTube or Facebook or whatever getting shot by police officers. And a lot of times it looked like it wasn't even a big deal. And so I got on YouTube and started dissecting videos. And I saw that in my experience that – just about every single one was avoidable. And so Jackson County got ahead of the game before they actually had an issue with this. Oregon is actually very low on the list of this being an occurrence. Like, I think the law enforcement in Oregon does a wonderful job, but their first go-to would be pepper spray or taser or something like that. But I wanted to teach them how to read the body language, how to address a dog that potentially seemed like a threat. And a lot of that can be thwarted with, you know, your body language, your confidence. When I see a dog like that, I'm stepping forward. I'm snapping my finger. It's kind of like what they teach you when you see a bear.
Mm-hmm.
Only it's not as risky as a bear, because a bear can take your life, you know. But it's, you know, they tell you, hey, you know, be confident. Don't run away. You know, don't panic. You know, be kind of loud, like, hey, you know. And I'm getting the dog's attention. And what I'm looking for is, can I distract the brain? And if I can distract the brain a little bit, then that lets me know that, okay, I can tap into this dog and avoid an attack. You know what I mean? So, mm-hmm.
So if the dog is really being aggressive and mm-hmm. barking their brains out, and you think, right, man, if I go through that gate, I am going to be toast. Right. Is there any, I mean, what's the first step in trying to get that dog down?
So I will say this, and I will just put a disclaimer that, you know,
don't try this without
a professional.
Point.
But I do this at the shelter all the time. There's a couple things that can make a dog seem even more aggressive, and that's leashes and fences. So, for example, there's a facility that I spent some time at, you know, a boarding facility, and there's several dogs in there that look like they want to rip your face off, you know. So the first thing I do when they're behind a fence is I like to use the gate or the door, and I will kind of push it, bump it mm-hmm. inwards, and kind of bump them, not hurting them, but bump them. And the minute I see the dog just retreat even an inch or two, then I know that I own this dog, and if I approach the dog properly, you know, I'll be okay. I don't come in sweet talking. I don't come in trying to be their friend, because that can have a counter effect. The same with the fearful or insecure dog. When you're trying to talk sweet to it or be its friend, you're going into their kind of where their brain's at when I want to bring them out. And so I will bump them a little bit with the gate or fence, and I will start throwing out expectations like sit down, or I'll have my hand up in the air and snap me my finger. And I take a more authoritative approach and a confident approach to let them know, like, hey, you know, we're going to be okay, but you need to respect me. You know what I mean? So,
John Perrette goes by JP. He is a dog trainer. Let's take a phone call here from Paul in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
What a great show. I've got a Weimaraner and a Wutzit at home. The Weimaraner, we put through a great deal of training because, you know, he's a big dog and a hunting dog, and he does really well socially with most other dogs, but he goes nuts over long-haired dogs, primarily huskies, husky types. Australian shepherds can sometimes get him going, and he starts behaving really aggressively there. Is there something going on in that dog's brain? I know I'm asking you to diagnose over the radio.
No, you know, there could be many variables. So the first thing I would ask would be, you know, where is this environment taking place? Is it on leash? Is it in a dog park?
Oh, on leash, we go down and have breakfast in Grants Pass every Saturday and Sunday.
Okay. The second thing I would ask, does it have any past, incidents with those types of breed?
I honestly don't know. We got him at about a year as a rescue. I think somebody tried to make an apartment dog out of him.
Okay. So that could be, you know, one of those two things could be also factors. You know, it's like I said earlier, you know, leashes can create what I call pseudo-aggression, just like fences can. And so what I would recommend, to be honest with you, because the first thing I'd like to do, like when I don't know if you heard earlier in the show, but on Sundays at R&R Pet Resort in Phoenix, I bring my dogs in, which are pretty balanced. And for a lot of clients that don't get the opportunity of actually taking their dog off a leash with dogs that they suspect they might have a problem with, this is a great, safe environment to do so. That's kind of where the bottom line, I say, hey, look, it's not as bad as you thought, or it's worse than you thought. And most of the times it's not as bad as people think it is. But we have to get the opportunity to expose him to the things that are triggering him. You know what I mean? Then let's say it goes great and he gets along with my dogs, or I pull in a husky and he got along. Then I start kind of looking at, okay, if this is mostly on leash, then I'm going to kind of look at your relationship with him. Because if, and I'm not saying the dog doesn't respect you or trust you, but oftentimes with a lot of clients, if they don't have that respect or trust from their dog, then a leash becomes a hindrance and they feel kind of like contained, and then they feel like they've got to defend themselves. You know what I mean? The other thing too is when I have a leash on, the way I like to use my corrections, or what I call interceptions, because to me a correction implies that a bad behavior has already occurred, and I really focus on intercepting the brain well before the bad behavior. So let's say I'm sitting and having breakfast with you guys, and I can see, you know, coming down the block is a husky, and I know that this is going to start revving up my dog. I might do just a series of little like leash pops to kind of intercept the brain. So by the time the dog's getting closer, your dog's not already at an 8 or a 9. You get what I'm saying?
It
might even be touch. I might give him a little poke in the shoulder or the neck or the belly, just to kind of keep him more like a 3 or a 4, so that once the dog's getting closer, I've now got your dog operating on a lower level versus, okay, here it comes, and then I'm trying to correct. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Feel free to get in touch with me if you want to pursue different avenues with that.
All right. Thank you.
Paul, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. And thanks for – we do have another one here from – I don't have time to get to it here, but from Becca about treats. We can talk about treats in a future program, I guess.
Okay.
John Perrette, JP, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
It was my pleasure. It's been fun.
K-Leadership 9 online. Thanks for joining us in this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. Hour 2 is coming up. From Jefferson Public Radio at Southern Oregon University, this is the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Coming up after the news, all the creatures you share your house with. This is not about family or pets. It's about bugs and bacteria and other things you might rather not think about. Rob Dunn visits to talk about his book, Never Home Alone. Oh boy, he's got a list of things that we share living space with. Bacteria? Sure. Bugs? Naturally. Spiders? Mold? Fungi? Check, check, and check. It's like a whole ecosystem inside the walls, and that is exactly our guest's point. He says we miss a lot of things by spending so much time indoors away from nature. And he writes about the increasing likelihood that the rise in some modern allergies and other maladies are caused by the lack of exposure to nature. Rob Dunn and Never Home Alone, and your phone calls and emails ahead on the Jefferson Exchange. First, the news.